Coming up on the Hockey News pregame show, Arizona Coyotes look to be moving to Utah. What are we going to call them?
Auston Matthews goes for 70 goals. He could be the first player in 30 years to do it. Can he do it at home? We'll find out.
And joining us from the Frozen Four in Minnesota, we've got Editor-in-Chief Ryan Kennedy on Macklin Celebrini and What You Need to Know.
I'm David Alter.
I'm Mike Otrakos, and this is the Hockey News pregame show, brought to you by BetMGM and NorthlandHockey.com. What's up, hockey fans? Welcome to the Hockey News pregame show. I'm Michael Trikos, and with me, because Ryan Kennedy is off in the Frozen Four, we've got David Alter, our Toronto Maple Leafs team site editor and reporter. How you doing there, Dave?
I'm doing great. It's great to be here. Ryan Kennedy is getting frozen over there at the Frozen Four, but a lot's going on in the professional world, so really excited to help break it all down.
Well, you are part of the family. I think you are most used guest host or co-host.
The geographic proximity helps that I am in the headquarters, the home base.
Yeah, well, you're in the center of the hockey-verse.
Yes.
So we love that. We're going to talk a lot of Leafs on today's show because why not? We've got the expert on the Toronto Maple Leafs. But let's start with the Arizona Coyotes, Dave. And news this week, and it happened fast. It was starting with the rumors that, you know, this team was going to be possibly relocating to Utah for the start of next year. I think it actually started with the NHL was putting together another schedule for next year just in case. And literally in a matter of days, the Coyotes players now have been told that, yeah, starting next season, those Coyotes are going to be playing in Salt Lake City, Utah, in the same arena as the NBA's Utah Jazz. What did you make of this news? And, yeah, what did you make of this news?
I mean, I wasn't really surprised. I mean, there's the initial shock when you find out that it's imminent and that it's getting put together really quickly. But when you look at the history of the ownership and just kind of all the events that led up to them playing in this arena kind of breaking it all down, you kind of felt like something had to give. I mean, when they lost that vote for the Tempe location, which I actually got to see the first time I went to Mullet Arena, that first trip last season, I stayed at a Residence Inn hotel that my window view backed onto the mud pit that was going to be that venue. Nice little area. It made a lot of sense. And there was an active lobbying group that was just there to kind of vote against it. And, you know, based on everyone I talked to, it just seemed like that this was an ownership group that was going to do things their way and not play ball. And because of that, everything is just, they're just like a bull in a china shop trying to get this force. If you know anything about the NHL, if you know anything about business and trying to put things together, you kind of have to play the game and get everyone on board. They didn't do it. There's all kinds of reports about who was getting paid and what. I think the biggest takeaway was when Andre Tournier said that, like, they had kind of heard about this in January and that led to the 14-game losing streak or whatever they went on. I think that was kind of where the writing was on the wall here.
Yeah, because Coyotes at one point this season were looking like a surprise team. Yeah. Connor Ingram was playing lights out. A lot of people are saying, like, is this going to be a team that sneaks in? So, you know, here we are. The good news, if you're a Coyotes fan, is that, you know, Alex Morello has an option, it looks like, to bring the team back. And it looks like the NHL is not completely closing the door on Arizona. I don't really know what to make of that.
I have a feeling I feel like this is going to be something that is like a best behavior ownership, what the NHL's ideal parameters are for any new owner that comes in, which means you've got to pay X, you've got to make sure the building is in place, you've got to meet everything with deadlines on time, no room for error, no leeway, no asking for extensions. Based on what I've heard around the league, they just don't want any BS when it comes to if a team's going to come here, because that marketplace has just been through the rigors. So if they're going to come back and it's going to be under that same ownership group, it is going to be way different than what they've experienced so far. That's what I make of that.
Do you think the NHL has a right to maybe not close the door on Arizona as an actual hockey market? Because, you know, two prominent NHLers, one of them is, closing in on 70 goals in Austin Matthews. I don't think he gets to the NHL if not for the Coyotes, because, I wrote a book that, highlighted Matthews and a lot of other stars today's journeys to the NHL. And Austin Matthews, when did he fall in love with hockey? Going to a Coyotes game with his uncle, he was entranced by that Zamboni. He could have easily been a golfer, a baseball player. Heck, his size, he could have been a football player.
He saw Ovi do that diving goal, which to me is still one of the craziest goals ever. Like, you know which one I'm talking about. With Wayne Gretzky on the bench looking at
him. He's sliding on his back, and Austin Matthews is like, I want to be a hockey player. Yeah. So you might not get Austin Matthews in the NHL. Matthew Nye is another prominent guy. Tage Thompson, I've been in Arizona. I've covered that team. I've talked to Cliff Fletcher, who, lives in Arizona.
Yeah.
A lot of people say, it's a great hockey market from a grassroots level right now. You look at the Junior Coyotes, they go far into tournaments.
Yeah.
There's a lot of ex-NHLers coaching down there. It seems like it's a place that all they're missing is maybe a rink and some on-ice success. Do you buy it that, the NHL should be in the desert?
Yeah, I do. I mean, all the metrics are there for big business. Like, what do we know? We know the NHL wants more of an American footprint to kind of compete for more revenue-making opportunities, right? And so when you look at the NHL compared to all the other big four sports, they have way more U.S. markets. It's not a matter of the total amount of teams. It's how many U.S. markets that they're in, and right now they're only in 25. So they want to expand that, and Salt Lake City will get theirs, which is one of the growing markets as well. But Phoenix and that surrounding area is established, and I have not come across anyone who's had a bad thing to say about the market and living in there. So it's a no-brainer, and which is why I think when this all gets done, it's going to be one of those things where they may not even call it a no longer NHL. They might call it an active market. Like, it might be one of those things, because I think there's going to be every push to kind of get it set there, but they need a proper building in a market that in a city that makes sense. Glendale, I guess, doesn't work.
No.
And then, but you know what? If it is new ownership, maybe they negotiate something where that could be a temporary home. I don't know. Wouldn't surprise me if hockey is happening there on a minor league level to bridge it. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, that could happen. So, I think it's a great market from a population, from a climate, from an everything standpoint. I could even see Frozen Fours happening there. Like, you never know.
There's a lot of Canadians who go there. Yeah. We think about snowbirds going to Florida if you live in Ontario or Montreal. But, for a lot of people out west and a lot of active seniors, Arizona is the place to be.
It's actually more, fun fact, it's actually more desirable than Florida if you've ever suffered a major injury to retire in, because they say
it's great for arthritis.
The lack of humidity is better on the joints and all that stuff than it is in Florida.
I think that's why Phil Kessel went there for his Ironman. So there we go.
Yes, yes.
All right, so let's talk about another guy who's chasing down a record. Not an Ironman, but Austin Matthews. Not Arizona born, but Arizona raised. Two goals away as we were talking, heading into this Saturday night game against the Red Wings, from 70 goals. Dave, you've seen him all season long. Yeah. I've covered him since he was a world junior player, and at the World Championships and at the World Cup. I've seen him grow. Is this the best we've seen Austin Matthews? Is this the most confident we've seen him with his offensive ability?
It's hard to argue that this isn't the best. I mean, he does seem to be getting better with each season, with the exception of last year, but the belief was that he was hurt.
Yeah.
He was still putting up well above average numbers for a star, and was doing that not really feeling 100%. So now he's closing in on 70, and it's a marvel at this point. Like, when you got players and you've got teammates and team players from other teams just kind of talking about how in awe they are of someone being able to put this many amount of goals in the modern era of hockey, it really is astounding. Everything is kind of evolving that you always kind of wondered, how is the offense going to kind of continue to go? Mm-hmm. And so he's finding new ways to do it. The equipment's getting better too. Like, I'm sure there's always secrets about his stick that we don't know and things like that. But it's one thing to have that. It's another way to be able to execute. And certainly that's what Austin Matthews is doing.
You mentioned he's healthy this year. Only has missed one game. And you really have to go back to his rookie year where he played all 82 games to find a year where he hasn't missed significant time. Like last year, he played 74. The year before, 73. 52, and I guess, you know, yeah. I guess we're talking about maybe like the year with COVID got interrupted. But, you know, he generally misses some time, whether it's with a back injury, a wrist injury or whatever.
Yeah.
That's, you know, healthy Austin Matthews, you know, does damage.
For sure. I mean, let's look at it a point per game basis. So go back to that 1920 season.
Yeah.
I believe the season got cut off at 72 games or something like that. And so he played 70. And his numbers there were pretty wild. Like, he was 3 goals away from 50 at that point. So he probably should have 3 60-goal seasons.
Easily could have got it there, yeah.
Right. And so he would have at least set that new benchmark there. And then in a 56-game season, he played 52 and was putting up wild numbers. You could argue that he was just playing Canadian teams. And so
41 goals in 52 games.
Yeah.
That's insane.
It was. I mean, again, he was playing against just the Canadian teams, and outside of Edmonton, there were not great teams.
I mean, Carey Price led the Montreal Canadiens to the Stanley Cup
Montreal
that year.
But Montreal was the fourth-ranked team.
Connor Hellebuyck, was he a Vezina candidate that year?
No, it just goes to show you it was a weird year, right? Like, it really was. Look at Montreal after that. but anyway, I'll digress.
I digress, yeah.
Yeah, so look, Austin Matthews is a marvel, and he continues to find crazy ways to put the puck in the net. 50 even strength goals. I think he has one empty net goal this year too. So
the 50 even strength, it might be more impressive than if he gets 70.
Yeah, like that's...
Like, he's not just relying on empty netters. He's not just relying on the power play.
And these goals aren't happening to make it 6-2. They're like giving them the lead. They're the first goals of the game. They're the changing lead games. They're the game breaker goals.
Yeah.
So if there was a stat or a metric where you could put weight behind the significance of the goals, he would be well up there too.
And you know what? People who don't watch the Leafs on a daily basis might say, okay, well, he's playing with Marner, or they've got Nylander and they've got Tavares. Well, look at how many guys are making, you know, more than $10 million on this team. And, you know, they're stacked offensively up front. And granted, on the power play, he does get to play with a lot of stars. But lately, his line mates are Max Domi and Tyler Bertuzzi. Let's talk about this line, because I think this was Mitch Marner's injured and it was a temporary fix. Let's throw Domi and Bertuzzi on with Matthews. Let's see what kind of clicks, because those guys had been working really well with William Nylander at one point. What are you making of those guys? Because Bertuzzi and Domi, it seems like you can throw them with anyone right now. They're gonna find success, but in particular, have the Leafs stumbled upon something that is permanent and that we're going to see in the playoffs?
Yeah, well, no. It, not only are we figuring out if it's a question, Sheldon Keefe hinted that in his Saturday morning availability when he said that this opportunity was kind of created with Marner injured, but he said, quote, this is a real thing in terms of his playoff approach now. So you're going to see this. And I think a lot of it is the fact that I don't remember who position this to me, but it makes a lot of sense. In the past, when it was always Matthews and Marner together, that left winger was just kind of their person.
At one time, it was like a Hyman or a Bunting.
Right, to kind of distribute the puck to the other two stars. But, you know, Bertuzzi, he's a $5.5 million player. And now he's producing really well.
Yeah.
And you have Max Domi, who can find the puck for these guys. And there's an instant chemistry with Domi and Bertuzzi, and there's an instant chemistry with Domi and Matthews now, to the point where Matthews himself doesn't have to be that guy where he's like, okay, that guy's just the puck getter for me.
Yeah.
Like, he's got the options all across the board now. And both of those guys, Domi and Bertuzzi, can get the puck out of the dirty areas. So there's more versatility out of that line. And that's something that Matthews really hasn't had to kind of play with. So they really have stumbled on something different here, but it is going to be what they're going to start the playoffs with. And so Mitch Marner kind of moves down, and that allows them to spread up and create better matchups, because what have the Leafs always lost out into the playoffs? It's always been about the matchups, right? Yeah. They just haven't
locked
had the...
down on the Matthews line, right? And it becomes, okay, the second line's got to score. When you lock down on the second line, and it's like, well, do they have a third line?
Right.
Is that fourth line even, like, is just a non-factor?
But now you can instead of just worrying about locking down Matthews, you can now overload that second line or bring up that third line to have some more weapons and really give the opposition more to think about. And so I think this is exactly what they're going to stick with for game one.
Now, Max Domi, it's almost, you almost forget that this guy was a 12th overall pick, a star with the London Knights.
Yeah.
He's not just a Bunting or... You know, I wouldn't even say he's a Bertuzzo. Like, he's got skill, and you see the vision he's got. You see the ability for him to, you know, find Matthews and to kind of float the puck over, saucer passes over to him. Both Bertuzzi and Domi are going to be free agents this summer.
Right.
What are the chances that one or even both of them re-sign? Because Domi, you know, I'm looking right now, $3 million he's on the books for. Bertuzzi, $5.5 million. That's a combined $8 million. Can the Leafs get them for under $10 million combined?
I get the sense that Domi is more likely to stick around than Bertuzzi is.
He's willing to take a hometown?
I don't know if it's a hometown, but there's something where maybe you can give him slightly more AAV for more years.
Okay.
Like, where it looks like a good deal in the long run, but...
He's 29 years old.
Yeah, but you could do like a 4x4, which is kind of a discount because of the term. You know, you're giving more, but you're buying out years. And 33 is not terribly old or whatever. Like, you can look at it that way. I'm not saying that's what he's going to sign for. I'm just spitting out potential starting points. Mm-hmm. And look, you can see he's motivated playing for the Leafs, just given the lineage and like everything he talks about here.
Yeah.
So there is something there. The Bertuzzi one, just because of the circumstances in terms of how that came about last summer, where he just really couldn't get the payday and the cap is going up. I see Bertuzzi getting more and kind of being priced out of this market, just given what they've already committed to with William Nylander. And I don't know, the Mitch Marner one's maybe the big wild card there, so you kind of have to figure that out as well.
Yeah, both guys are 29 years old. You can make an argument for both. Me personally, I would rather have Bertuzzi. I think that... I just think he fits what the Leafs need more. I get it. Watching Max Domi go after Simone Nemec the other night, that's sort of a, you know, after Nemec was...
They give you flashes of Nazem Kadri, like if this happens in the playoffs?
No, it gave me flashes of where I've seen too many guys take liberties with Leaf star players and everyone just kind of look around. We saw it with Brad Marchand and Timothy Liljegren earlier this year.
Right.
No one does a thing. Now we're starting to see, hey, you touch number 34. I don't care if you're a fighter or not. You know, Domi didn't even hesitate. He grabbed him, just started filling him. He endeared himself to fans with that. But I like Bertuzzi. I think there's a higher upside. I think I could see Bertuzzi scoring 30 goals. I can't see Domi doing that. I think he's more of a... I don't think he's a scorer. I think if he's going to be a successful NHLer, it's going to be just, you know, he's going to pick up some assists on Matthews and whatnot. But, you know, I would rather go with Bertuzzi in that regard.
Yeah, I think it works. I mean, I get it. I just don't get the sense from him that Toronto's necessarily number one on the list in terms of taking hometown discounts.
He's going to have a ton of guys or a ton of teams trying to sign him.
Right, and then I don't think Toronto just offering less to stay is going to be enough to lure him in. Unless... Domi already kind of stays and they figure out some sort of package. But yeah, I don't know.
It's a problem for another day.
Right.
A problem for today or possibly for a week from today.
Right.
Who starts in net, Dave?
Because I don't think there's any debate about this.
Well, there should be debate because
of the 6 goals from Ilya Samsonov the other
day.
Well, night.
Not just because the 6 goals that Ilya Samsonov just gave up, but literally less than a week from when he was appointed the quote unquote number one goalie for this team. He goes the other way. And it's not like we haven't seen this before from Samsonov. Yeah. He doesn't have the currency to say, hey, you know what? Forget about that 6-goal game. This guy is, you know, this kind of goalie. This isn't Connor Hellebuyck. This isn't Vasilevsky. This isn't Shesterkin. This is a guy who was, you know, put on waivers and no team wanted. I don't know what the Leafs situation looks like in net, but I guess fluid would be the word I would choose, right. Where it's, you know, if Samsonov is not looking like the Samsonov that I expect him to look like, I don't know if he's the starter in game one.
If he has a bad game against the Red Wings, it's a fair point.
Yeah.
I think you can give him the mulligan, and what I look for is what's his attitude? Like, when I go into the room that following Friday, and when he speaks to reporters, what's his attitude? And it was way different than when he was going through his struggles after a 6-goal game in December.
What do you mean, confident, or was he kind of a little angry?
Just kind of like rolling it off. He wasn't wearing it, and he was kind of saying that, look, it's one of those things where it's like, you have to just forget about it. And that's what he was saying. He was like, this happened, and forget about it. How you respond to this is the most important. And so I think he's opened up to that line of thinking where he wasn't before, where he was really wearing these bad results. And that's why it was compounding. So I think it's fair to be a little concerned, but I think it's more of a panic if he has back-to-back games like that and he's starting to show real signs where he doesn't look good in front of the net. There were a lot of high-quality chances against him in that game.
Well, the defense didn't make it easy for him. And that's my whole argument against the Leafs and why they shouldn't be considered a Stanley Cup favorite.
Right, but I don't think that's going to be different with Wall in that.
Well, they don't have the defense. Like, it's either you have a strong defense and a weak goaltender because the defense can overcome whatever the goaltender is not bringing. And we saw that with Vegas last year.
Right.
We saw that with Colorado a couple years ago. Or you go the other route, and you've got Carey Price, and you don't have the defense. But Toronto doesn't have the defense, and they don't have the goaltenders. So it's either, you know, ride the hot hand. And I don't know if it's going to be Wall. All I'm saying is, if I'm Sheldon Keefe, you know, to steal a phrase from Ron Wilson, I've got a short leash. I've got a Chihuahua leash in regards to how short that leash is.
Wow.
And I don't know, like, are you confident where, you know, if Samsonov doesn't look good in game one of the playoffs, do you just keep rolling him out there? Or is it, you know, if he has a bad game?
Depends how bad the game is. But I mean, that, like, look, this is the Leafs playoff goaltending situation is not going to be any different than it's been the last 3 years. Really, it's just, here's who we think it is right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, the playoffs will force quicker decision making. But in the regular season, it was all about who looks good and who's kind of where the cream rises to the top. Who's at the top right now? Right now, it's Samsonov.
How about if none of the cream rises, man?
Well, then
that cream just falls.
Then you do what the Caps used to do in the late 90s, which was win and you're in. It's not the right strategy. Or, you know, they always say you need two goaltenders now. And the Leafs are trying to push this narrative that, like, they don't have a number one, that you just, you know, we're in a league now where you need two goalies. And that might have to be the narrative for the playoffs. You know, they have four goals.
I was going to say.
They have Martin Jones, and now Matt Murray is getting a conditioning, LTI conditioning stint, so he's playing in a competitive game against Syracuse Crunch. So now they have four, and so that's another option if that looks good.
They got four goalies. Not one of them is a number one goalie. Okay. Looks like it's going to be Leafs-Panthers in the first round. What's changed since last year's matchup?
What has changed? Well, I mean, they don't have Radko Gudas. So maybe there is a little bit of a difference with the Panthers. The Panthers have struggled more late down the stretch than early, where before they had to starve for their supper and play their best hockey down the stretch just to no pun intended, scratch and claw their way in.
Scratch and claw, like that.
Yeah, well, they're the Panthers, right? That was their whole thing. And then they had some sort of other, oh yeah, they were the Dogs, which was the other thing. That was their nickname in that first round against the
Boston Bruins. Because
they were the underdogs, and no one except for me, I did call Florida to win that series, was giving them a chance to win against the record-setting Boston Bruins. But anyway, that's what's different now. Now they might be more of a favorite in that regard, but yeah.
I would argue the Leafs are a little bit more physical than they were last year,
oh,
too.
Oh, for sure they were.
Yeah.
Look, they've done all the right things to grab it. Now we'll see if it actually works. Because they made a lot of changes last year, at the trade deadline. They got McCabe, they got O'Reilly. Mm-hmm. They did all these things that should have looked better. And in that first round against Tampa, even though they won that series, they probably didn't deserve to win that series. Like, Tampa was the better team in that series. But, and then against Florida, they just really rolled over in that. So I think they'll be better now, and I think that's only because they're playing their best hockey down the stretch. But their best hockey has been okay. Is it enough? The defense is really the big question mark to me.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Okay, so as we head to the end of the regular season, we've got some playoff races, and I'm going to ask you, Dave, who of these following teams do you expect to be in the playoff wild card spot, or just in the playoff spot? Because we've got New York Islanders are holding down the third spot in the Metro with 89 points. 3 points back of them are the Pittsburgh Penguins with 86. They're currently in the second wild card spot. Then we got the Capitals with 85 and the Red Wings with 85. And the Flyers with 85. Jeez. It is really coming down to it. I can't recall another season where we've got this many teams, and I agree with you. I like that play-in format. But, okay, of the Islanders, Penguins, Capitals, Red Wings, and Flyers, give me two teams that are going to be in there a week from now.
I think the Penguins are definitely going to be in there.
Oh, wow.
I just love the narrative of Kyle Dubas being in the playoffs.
I ran into him in the press box against when the Penguins were there, and I told him, I said, listen, I go, what a roller coaster season for you. I go, I'm kind of happy that you guys are in the hunt. And, you know, for all the misgivings that Kyle Dubas had in Toronto, and, you know, there were times when he kind of sparred with the media, and it was just kind of like very stubborn at times.
Right.
But, you know, he went into a difficult spot in Pittsburgh, where you've got a core that's just aging out, and, you know, he swung for the fences this year. And it didn't quite work out with Erik Karlsson and some of the other moves, whether it was like, you know, Riley Smith or even Ricard Raquel. I was going to say Rochelle. But I'm with you. I like the narrative. I love the fact that, you know, we could see another Sidney Crosby playoff run.
Okay, and so were the Islanders included in that,
yeah,
in that list you gave
me? Okay, Pittsburgh. Let's give another
New
team.
New York and Pittsburgh are the teams that are getting in there. Or do I need to pick a wild
card? I'm going Detroit-Pittsburgh. I say Pittsburgh gets the third spot in the Metro, and I say Detroit gets the second wild card spot.
I just don't see Patrick Wall not in the playoffs.
That would be great too, right? Just for the...
I feel like they brought him in, like... I just feel like he won't accept it. He and Sidney Crosby are guys that will their teams to playoffs.
How about Showtime Patrick Kane there, Dave?
Patrick Kane might do it, but Patrick Kane, I don't know. There's a lot of question marks on that.
See, I want Detroit in there because, you know, we haven't seen a playoff game.
If Justin Hall was playing on a regular basis, I would have loved to see that. But he's not.
But those poor fans in Detroit, they went, 20-plus years with a playoff run, and now they've gone, is it half a dozen seasons? They've got a brand-new shiny rink, and they haven't even christened it with a playoff game yet.
Yeah, best media meal in the NHL, Detroit.
Is it? With the Little Caesars?
Yes. Not just Little Caesars. It's a big buffet with, six courses and, five different proteins. It's amazing.
Five different proteins.
Yeah, it's amazing.
All right.
It is the best media meal, without question.
We both got a vote or a ballot for NHL Awards yesterday.
Yeah.
I'm happy to be, once again, a voter. I think the only 2 years I didn't vote was 1 year. Chris Botta was sparring with the New York Islanders, a reporter, and he actually got banned from, covering games. And there was a whole, protest.
That was
1 year where I sat out. And then last year I sat out because I was in between jobs. So I'm happy to be back voting. Not happy at how close these races are going to be. I really don't know what I'm going to do for the Hart Trophy. How are you with your Hart Trophy ballot right now?
Because
you have to have 5 selections.
Yes.
And I wish we could have 10 selections, really.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of know my 5. That's not the issue. My issue is who's first. That's really the struggle for me because it is a dead heat.
Yeah.
It really is. You can make the case for so many different guys. Early in the season, I was saying if Austin Matthews gets 70, it's a slam dunk. But now I don't know, just because I didn't expect Sidney Crosby to be willing his team to a playoff spot. And really, he is the reason, right? And if you look at most valuable, it's hard to make the argument that he's not, he like, without him, they're not there, right? Where without Austin Matthews, there's been stretches where the Leafs have played, they've been able to put up points without Austin Matthews.
It's you know, the argument for Crosby, I get it, and I'm with you. I think what he's done in Pittsburgh, like, you take him out of that lineup, 100% they're not in there.
Right.
But right now, he's ranked 15th in scoring. And right. to be out of the top 10, never mind the top 15,
right.
it's a tough sell for me. I know Taylor Hall won it when he wasn't a top scorer because he had that consecutive point streak and he led the Devils into a playoff spot. Obviously, Mario, the year when he had cancer, he wasn't, actually, I think he might have been a top 10 scorer right. even that year, despite only playing half the season.
Because he missed so many games, yeah.
Yeah, but it's a point. Yeah. With Crosby, it's like, geez, like 89 points in 79 games.
It's the other metrics outside of points, though, right? Like when you look at like the possession and all that other stuff and some of the other attributes, and we're evolving in that where we just don't really look at the points anymore as the sole metric or goals or assists or what have you, even though those are benchmarks that like grab the headlines. So I don't know. It's tough. Nathan MacKinnon is certainly deserving of it, too.
Yep.
Artemi Panarin's deserving of it. It's tough. Like, I'm going to take till the very last day to decide.
Do you have any non-forwards in your ballot right now? Like, a defenseman or a goaltender? Do you have, like, a Connor Hellebuck? Do you got, like, a Roman Josi?
Yeah, I mean,
because you look at what Nashville's been doing, I don't know. Roman Josi is a guy that's kind of sneaking in as my number five guy now.
Yeah, I have to look underlying and see if he was the reason for a lot of that. Like, if in that streak, he was the reason that they were winning these games, a lot of them, for sure.
Yeah.
Connor Hellebuck, you can make the argument for sure, but I think that Winnipeg's defense just that great. As good as Connor Hellebuck is, I think a lot of it is his product of, like, they loaded up. They're like the anti a lot of teams. They're like, let's just load up on our big, tall D guys. And that's really where they're at.
Okay. Coming up after the break, we're going to go to Arizona. We've got Coyotes team site editor and reporter Remy Masti. I don't know if he's going to be our team site editor reporter for long, but he's going to break down the Coyotes and whether or not.
That is a dark extra.
Well, we're going to see if he wants to move to Salt Lake City because he could stay on.
Yeah.
So stick with us. I'm Michael Trikos, Director of Digital Media, and check out my weekday column called The Morning Take, where I break down the NHL's hottest topics every morning, Monday to Friday, at thehockeynews.com. Welcome back to the Hockey News pregame show. Happy to be joined by Arizona Coyotes site editor and reporter for now, Remy Masti. And Remy, have you already started looking at real estate agents, or like, what's the housing market look like in Salt Lake City, Remy?
I haven't started looking at that yet, but it has been a crazy time for everyone here, everyone covering the team. I'm assuming all the players as well. It's just, it came as a shock.
I'm joking, obviously, but you know, you're right. In the last, few days, this thing went from 0 to 100 real quick. What has been the reaction from players and anyone you've talked to, even in Arizona? Is this sort of like, how are people reacting to this?
The fans obviously on social media are not happy about all of this. They're heartbroken that their team was just ripped away from them. As far as the players, they're kind of trained, obviously, not really to say much to the media. But according to some reports, I think according to Elliot Friedman, they kind of felt, some of them felt betrayed and, you know, upset at the ownership group. So it's been, the reaction has not been great, obviously. It came as a shock because it seemed things were headed in the right direction with an auction supposed to take place on June 27th for land in Phoenix. And the Coyotes ownership group has said they're committed to staying in Arizona throughout this whole season, despite some rumors about relocation. So to hear that they were really just working on the Salt Lake City deal probably for months was surprising for sure.
Remy, I remember I went to visit you when the Leafs were in town. It was my second time at Mullet. I went the season before. My first impression was, when I was there, I was like, this is a cool, unique experience. But when I came to see you the second time, I'm like, okay, I can see this getting old real quick. Did it feel like that covering a team in a 5,000 seat building that like it just doesn't have the same kind of feel, I guess, when you're having that kind of work environment day in, day out?
Yeah, it's something that, I mean, personally, I got used to because I really only went to Coyotes games this season. So I was used to it, but I could tell for, I mean, you covering games in Toronto, it's basically night and day. So, I mean, it's something that I'm sure the NHL was a little bit fed up with. And I think that was the main source of why they're moving, is that even if they got land, they would still need to play at Mold Arena for another three or so seasons, which is just not really acceptable financially. And it's something that the NHL just wasn't really willing to risk.
Now, you've been there for a full season covering this team, Remy. There's talk that, you know, even though they are moving and relocating to Salt Lake City, Utah for next year, that, you know, the NHL hasn't closed the door completely on the Arizona Coyotes or Arizona as a hockey market. What do you make of that? And do you think that, you know, based on what you've seen in this last like 12 months, that, you know, the NHL can thrive as long as, you know, they get the arena thing sorted out? And, you know, let's face it, if they've got some on-ice success.
Yeah, as far as a like potential expansion later on, I think it was more to appease Alex Morello. I heard, you know, he's a little bit of a wild card. He's a bit emotional. He wanted the team in Arizona, it seemed like. So I think they were trying to appease him in a way, but he still has to be committed to buying land and constructing an arena, which has seemed to be very difficult for him. But I do feel that Arizona is a market where hockey could thrive. And I think that Coyotes fans have kind of gotten a bad rap over the years. I mean, imagine 20 years of basically losing seasons all the time, relocation rumors, arena drama, owner drama. It's a lot to deal with. And I think without all that, they could thrive. It's a hockey market that could thrive. Obviously, guys like Austin Matthews and Matthew Knies, Toronto Maple Leafs guys, are from Arizona and they're prideful of that. So it shows that NHL players could be born, raised, and, you know, play in Arizona.
You know, there is the Tucson Roadrunners, the farm team, also in the state. Could you see maybe a situation where the Arizona Coyotes just continue to live on temporarily as an AHL team, maybe even at Mullet Arena, because it's only 5,000, until the NHL could come back?
Would people be interested in that?
Yeah, what I'm hearing, according to like some reports, is that the Tucson Roadrunners might move to Mullet Arena next season. It's not a done deal, but that's what it seems like is a possibility of that could happen. So I think that would be good, just to at least have some sort of hockey aside from the Arizona State Sun Devils, to have that in the state. And maybe, I guess, you know, people could still watch hockey there, which is nice.
Well, listen, this isn't the last we heard of these, or the last we're going to hear of these developments. You're going to have to follow THN.com. You know, Remy's all over this. So thanks again, Remy, for, you know, taking the time to come on and talk about the arena thing. I hope it gets sorted out somehow, that, you know, we don't lose you as a site editor and reporter. But, you know, like I said, consider moving to Salt Lake City, buddy, because the future is there. Listen, we've got more of the Hockey News pregame show coming up. Stick with us after the break.
Hey there, everybody. This is Ryan Kennedy, editor-in-chief of the Hockey News, and I have a new web column, Future Watch Weekly, that you should keep an eye out for. Every week, I look at the developmental world of hockey from NCAA, Major Junior, all points in between. So check it out every Friday morning at THN.com.
Welcome back to the Hockey News pregame show. We're happy to be joined by Editor-in-Chief Ryan Kennedy and, you know, my longtime co-host of the Hockey News pregame show, who's in St. Paul, Minnesota for the Frozen Four. How you doing there, Ryan?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
So, Ryan, Denver against Boston College. How excited are you about this final? And, you know, is this sort of what we kind of expected?
You know what? This was like an all blue blood Frozen Four, because, you know, the other two teams that lost in the semis were Michigan and Boston University. So I pretty much came in saying, you know what, whatever happens, I'm happy, because every team has NHL prospects. Every team had great storylines. You know, we could have had a BUBC final, which would have been insane, but we also could have had Denver, Michigan. Both those programs are tied for the most men's national championships in college hockey with 9. So now you have Denver, they could win their 10th and become the winningest program ever, or Boston College, which is just laden with NHL talent. Cutter Gauthier, the NTDP kid line of Will Smith, Ryan Leonard, Gabe Perreault, Jacob Fowler in net. Like, this is a very exciting team and a bit of a clash of styles too, because, you know, BC's a bit younger, Denver incredibly well coached. So, you know, this could be a 2-1 game, which ironically is all that Denver has played in this tournament so far, 2-1 games, or it could be like 6-3. I wouldn't be surprised either way. I think it's really going to come down to which team imposes their will on the other.
Ryan, a little bit of a Leaf-centric question, but you have Kay Weber there, who has just been eliminated. And so there are reports about him joining the Leafs. If he does, what were your impressions of him in this Final Four tournament?
Well, I have a very fun anecdote for you. You know, I was at the Hobey Baker ceremony last night, and obviously Macklin Celebrini of BU was the winner. All the Terriers stayed, even though they were eliminated. They came out to the ceremony to support Celebrini. And I was talking to Brian Kelly from Boston University, and I was like, hey, the little stickers that all the Terriers have on their helmets, like, what are those for? Are those games played? And he's like, no, it's for, like, special things, like block shots. He's like, you may notice Cade Weber has no more room on his helmet because he blocked so many shots. So, you know, that's kind of what you're getting in Weber. I think he's like 6'7". He's a huge kid, originally drafted by Carolina. But I know he's very excited to join the Leafs because he sees, like, you know, there might be an opportunity for him sooner than later. Whereas you look at Carolina, they already have a stacked blue line and more players coming, like Scott Morrow, that they just signed to his entry-level deal once his NCAA career was finished. So, you know, you're looking at a stay-at-home guy. He was very raw when he was drafted and, you know, has really developed and put a lot of, you know, muscle and weight onto that frame that was once lanky. So, you know, you're looking at, I think, a stay-at-home guy that obviously can kill penalties and block shots for you.
So, Ryan, Macklin Celebrini doesn't get to the final, but he does get the Hobey Baker. You know, quite the honor for a guy who's only 17 years old. You know, what else can you say about a guy who's, you know, we're talking about someone who's, I guess, the de facto number one overall prospect heading into this year's draft?
Well, you know, just talking to people this weekend, I'm really getting a better sense of who Celebrini is. And, you know, on the ice, going back to the World Juniors with Canada, you could tell just how driven he was. And, you know, there is a lot of Connor Bedard in him where you know that there's a ton of skill, but there's a really big edge to both Bedard and Celebrini. You know, we saw it last year with Bedard when he was still in juniors and at the World Juniors where, like, he'll put licks on guys and he'll trash talk on top of, you know, scoring oodles of goals. With Celebrini, I mean, he crumbled Carter King of Denver in that semifinal with a little bit of a cross check to the kidneys or liver. I don't know what. But, you know, talking to, you know, his parents at the ceremony, they were saying, like, you know, he has always been this driven, focused kid. He's the youngest winner of the Hobey Baker ever. Obviously, he's only 17. But the idea of going to university at 17, it was a big goal for Celebrini. And he obviously had to accelerate high school, basically doing grades 11 and 12 in 1 year. But, you know, they had said to him when he was at USHL Chicago, he was like, I want to try to go to university next year. And they're like, all right, well, let's see how it goes. And, you know, he blew the doors off the USHL on the ice. And obviously, education-wise, he got it done off the ice. And so mission accomplished. He got to BU right away. And, You know, it's funny, Jay Pandolfo, the former NHLer who's now the coach of the Terriers, he was saying earlier in the weekend that, you know, the first sort of practices, training camp they had this year at BU, Celebrini like ticked off a lot of guys because he was going full bore right away, like just getting up in guys' faces and like not giving them an inch on defense. And Pandolfo loved that. And obviously they're all, you know, friends now. And Celebrini even told us, you know, those Terriers were like brothers to him, including his actual brother, Aiden, the Vancouver Canucks pick who's on the team. But I think this was a real big statement year for Celebrini. And the last thing I'll say is just, you know, seeing him in person again, he didn't score against Denver, but man, he has a laser of a shot. Like he had a couple of really good opportunities that just didn't go in, but he gets it off real quick.
Ryan, what can you tell us about Zeev Bouyim, the Denver U defenseman? I know his older brother was drafted by the Detroit Red Wings, but where does he rank in terms of his talent with his brother, and where do you think he might get drafted this year in terms of the order?
Yeah, so Zeev Bouyim, another true freshman, a bit older than Celebrini, but still a first-time eligible player. He has been amazing for Denver this year. I think he had 49 points in 41 games so far as a freshman, as a defenseman. Obviously, he has incredible offensive talent, but very good defensively as well. You know, he doesn't have a ton of size. He's not small, though. He's about 6 foot. I would say he's better than his brother, Shai, who's more of a long-term project. Shai Bouyim, I think, is like 6'4". But with Zeev, very intriguing. You know, I know our own Tony Ferrari has him as the best defenseman in the class. I've been incredibly impressed with Bouyim, not only this weekend so far, but also, again, he won gold at the World Juniors with Team USA, where his Denver coach, David Carl, was also the bench boss. So, you know, you're getting, I hazard to say, sort of a Quinn Hughes kind of archetype. And if a team likes him, I could certainly see him going 2 or 3 in the draft. The interesting thing about this draft class is there's a lot of high-end defensemen that have very different profiles. So you have Bouyim, who's kind of that modern-style defenseman. You have Anton Siliev, who is 6'7" and mobile out of Russia, more of a Victor Hedman kind of guy. You got Sam Dickinson and Artem Levchinov, who are more of the all-around guys that have size. It's really going to come down to who picks when. But like I say, if Bouyim went top 3, I wouldn't be surprised. If he goes top 10, somebody's getting a really good defense.
Awesome, Ryan. Another thing about Celebrini, we might actually get to see him and Connor Bedard at the World Championships later next month. Maybe it's a precursor to them playing together as teammates in Chicago. Listen, thanks again, Ryan. Follow all his coverage from the Final Four at THN.com. We've got more of the Hockey News pregame show coming up after the break. Hi, I'm Michael Trikos, Director of Digital Media, and check out my weekday column called The Morning Take, where I break down the NHL's hottest topics every morning, Monday to Friday, at thehockeynews.com. Welcome back to the Hockey News pregame show. What time is it, Dave?
It is time for Rapid Fire.
Our favorite time of the episode. All right. With the Masters happening this weekend, we're talking golf. Let's stick with the theme of golf. Which team is the most likely to be hitting the links earlier than expected in the NHL?
Oof, that is a tough one. It's probably going to be one of either Boston or Florida, I would have to think. I think that division is so heavy there. Let's go Florida Panthers first round.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Leaf fans. I'm sticking with the Toronto Maple Leafs here. Ooh. Yeah, I think last year was an anomaly, getting out of the first round. I think, you know, they're going to play the Panthers. We got Bob in net. We saw what Bob did last year in the playoffs. And I know we talked about this earlier. I'm not sold on this defense goaltending combo that the Leafs got.
Spicy meatball.
There you go. Question two. We know that the Arizona Coyotes are going to be moving to Salt Lake City, which begs the question, what do we call these guys?
I think you got to try and figure out the ownership with the Utah Grizzlies and just take that name and color scheme. I like the logo. It's got a rich hockey history. Sheldon Keefe's last professional hockey experience was with the Utah Grizzlies.
He played really?
Four games, I believe. It's in his hockey DB there, and he references hockey DB the other day.
A lot of Grizzlies out in Utah?
What's that?
A lot of Grizzlies out there?
I guess so. I mean, that's a team where you don't really relocate and take the name because it's ECH or ACH, AHL in that case, but I'd go Utah Grizzlies, make them green. That's what I would go with.
I like the Yeti. I'm going to stick with the singular name. You got the Jazz. So let's go Yeti. The other name that I like is the Salt Lake City Slickers because it's just kind of, it's a little fun.
That's like my Salt Lake City Peppers. like just going on or Salt Lake City Pepper Rivers, like to add lake and river, add another body of water in there.
NCAA question. Boston College and Denver are going to meet in the national championships. Ryan Kennedy highlighted there's a preview of this game. Who do you expect to come out on top and win the national championship?
Ooh, I'm going to go Denver U. It's been a little bit of a while there. I think they've got what it takes. There's some intriguing stories there. I'm going to go Denver U.
I'm going to go Boston College. Cutter Gauthier, Will Smith, Ryan Leonard, Gabriel
But think
Perreault.
About how disappointing that might be. Yeah. The finals seem to always end in disappointment.
Break their hearts.
And it's the unsung hero. It's anything can happen in a one-game winner-take-all.
All right, sticking with the youth. 14-year-old defenseman out of Calgary, Landon Dupont, was granted exceptional status. Yet another guy granted exceptional status to play in the WHL earlier for next season. He's going to be joining Aaron Ekblad and Sean Day as the only other defenseman to be granted exceptional status. Should hockey fans temper their expectations? And are we getting kind of tired of every single year there's another exceptional player?
I mean, I'm a little tired of it because it seems like it's happening too much. What we were talking about is like 3 of 8 that are kind of not quite there yet. And you have the risk of stunting a player's
development. It used to be generational players, Dave.
It should be generational players, and it seems to be motivated by other factors now, and that's probably what I don't like the most about it. So I think there is potential for DuPont for sure, but I wonder if this is, like you mentioned the two names there, one clearly established an NHLer, and one was a real reason why you shouldn't do it. And so it could fall somewhere in the middle here.
Sean Day not only didn't get drafted in the number one overall in the NHL, didn't even get drafted in the first two rounds in the NHL. The other thing to remember about Landon Dupont, and I hope that it pans out for him, I hope that he becomes the next Cale Makar or Quinn Hughes or whatever. Part of the reason why the Dub granted him exceptional status, there was talk that if they didn't, he was going to go USHL and do that route and end up in the NCAA. So, you know, Major Junior wanted to keep this guy within the system. So, you know, I hope he becomes the next Aaron Ekblad in the sense that he's a franchise player, but, you know, let's pump the brakes a little. Last question we've got here. Semifinals of the Women's World Hockey Championships are happening tonight, Saturday night, with Canada facing Czechia and the U.S. taking on Finland. Who do you think is more likely to pull off the upset, Czechia or Finland?
I'm going to say Finland. I believe they have a slightly better history of doing that. Like the Finns and Swedes kind of go 3-4 usually in that.
So. I covered a world championship where Finland did beat Canada and it was, you know, the goaltender stood on her head.
Obviously. Yeah, so I mean, and like look at Finland and their established history of goaltenders and establishing, and that's the big X factor in that type of game. So I would go Finland. Czechia could pull it off, but I think Finland goes.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with Finland as well, but you know, let's be honest, if we don't get a Canada-US final, we'd be really surprised.
It would, but it would be good for the game. Like, I think you need more spread out competition in whether it's men's or women's. I like when more countries are involved and can really make a push for a spread out talent pool.
Awesome. Well, I like it when you're involved in the Hockey News pregame show. This is great that you're able to join us. Listen, that's all the time we've got. That's David Alter. I'm Michael Trex. We're going to thanks BetMGM and NorthlandHockey.com, and we'll see you next time at the rink.